the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. That's Psalms 19. Now the author is expressing what people have always sensed, that the cosmos is telling a story. Cosmology over the past 100 years have unveiled the beauty and the scale of the story in an astounding new way. John Hort, in his book Resting on the Future, tries to give us a sense of the scale of the story by asking us to imagine that we take the 13.8 billion years since the Big Bang and divide that time up into 30 volumes of books. Each one of these volumes has 450 pages, and each one of the pages represents 1 million years. And this is what the story sounds like then. The first 20 volumes are taken up with the story of lifeless astrophysical, chemical, and geological transformations. Earth and other planets spin out around the sun in volume 21, about 4.5 billion years ago. The first signs of cellular life doesn't show up until 3.8 billion years ago. That's in volume 22. Life remains relatively uncomplicated until almost the end of volume 29, when the Cambrian explosion occurs. After that, living organisms become more complex at an accelerated pace. Dinosaurs eventually appear around the middle of volume 30 and go extinct on page 385, probably because of the earth-chilling effects of an enormous asteroid impact. This leaves only the last 65 pages of volume 30 to cover the development and flourishing of mammalian life. When do we humans show up? Well, our hominid ancestors appear a few pages from the end of volume 30. But anatomically modern humans do not arrive until page 450. Reflect the thought, ethical aspirations, a sense of personhood, and religious longing finally enters the cosmic story only towards the bottom of the last page of this whole set. Wow. Do you see the scale of this story and the fact that we humans are rather late in arriving as actors within this drama? This is a massive story. But something even more surprising than the scale is the trajectory. There is a movement towards greater complexity, greater life, greater consciousness, and greater meaning. There's an inner story happening within this story as well. Now, a purely materialistic philosophy, one that tries to explain everything just with the outer story, the physical story, they find it very difficult to explain this inner story, this inner trajectory. This philosophy has great confidence in the fact that if I can just peer far enough into our past and find the initial conditions that gave a rise to our cosmos, they'll be able to explain anything, everything. But do we seriously think that anyone would have predicted, after billions of years of lifeless chemical reactions, do you think anyone would have predicted that life would emerge? Even more astounding, that subjective consciousness would emerge out of lifeless elements of gases. Hindsight is such a great thing, but you know, very few would have predicted that kind of outcome. And you know, many atheistic materialists actually looks at subjective consciousness, at human life, and dismiss it as nothing more than an accidental, meaningless phenomena. However, it seems to me that there is an inner story, a trajectory within the story of our cosmos and of our universe, and it is human consciousness that is able to recognize, to appreciate, and to participate in the meaning of what is happening and what is unfolding. Now, we've been speaking about evolution in the past a couple of settings, and evolution emphasizes that aspect of our story, that we are part of a big, developing, dynamic story instead of part of just a stale and stagnant reality. This is a story with movement. This is a story that's developing. And what's great about this story is that meaning continues to unfold. Let me read to you Romans 8 from verse 19. The whole of creation is eagerly waiting for the full revelation of the children of God. From the beginning until now, the entire creation, as we know, has been groaning in one great act of giving birth. Wow. I love what Richard Rohr says about this. In this familiar passage, St. Paul seems to fully assume evolution. It has always seemed completely strange to me that there should be any resistance whatsoever to evolution in Christian theology or practice. Christians should have been first in line to recognize and cooperate with such a dynamic notion of God. But maybe many do not enjoy a fully relational God with all that that implies, and have just met an independent substance they call God. I can only assume that this reflects a very limited inner experience of God. Anybody who has paid attention to their inner life or read any history book surely recognizes that life and love are always cumulative, diffusive, and expanding. I've got a link to that article by Richard Rohr on the article that accompanies these teachings as well. So, stories are containers of meaning, and we are part of an enormous, a very big story. And one of the most exciting aspects of this story is that it's unfinished. Our universe continues to expand, the story continues to unfold, and with it, new meaning, greater meaning, novel meaning is possible. You see, as with any great story, the full truth and the full meaning is not found in its beginning. Any great story unfolds the meaning in the twists and the turns and the progression and the development of the story. And so we shouldn't assume that we can find the full truth of the meaning of our stories only in its beginning. It's an important part, but it is only part of what unveils this meaning. let me remind you of what we're busy doing here in this series of teachings. You are a living story with a past, a present, and a future. And the way in which we give greater meaning to our own personal stories is we place them in the context of a larger story. Now, the way in which we relate to our past, present, and future can either enrich our reality and our experience of reality or impoverish it. And so we are developing a framework of interpretation that I believe will allow us to have a healthy relationship to our past, to our present, and our future, enrich our reality. That's the aim. So far in the 7 or 8 teachings that we've done up to this stage, we've considered mostly the past, our source, where we come from. We've looked at the Genesis accounts, we've looked at evolution, we've now looked at cosmology. All of this tells us something about where we come from, and there's a beautiful way to relate to that. We still need to deal with how we relate to the present and how we relate to the future in sessions to come. But this, what we'll do next is we will, in the next session, we'll conclude this first part, and that is our relationship to the past. What can we learn? What can we say about ourselves, about God, as we look to our, to where we come from, as God is our source? And then we're going to move into how we relate to the present. I hope you enjoyed that. If you're enjoying this series, if it has meaning or value to you, please share it with your friends. Thank you. Bye.